Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Friday edition of The Drive. Been an overcast sort of, it looks like, it should be much colder weather, but I mean, it's been pretty pleasant. It's actually been a very comfortable day, but a couple of drops here or there. Looks like we're going to be fine, but welcome in the Friday Drive as we look forward to another big weekend of sports. I mean, you've got playoff baseball now moving to the division series, high school football all across the country. You've got, of course, college football. We had a little a preseason or a start of fall practice baseball opportunity today with Butch Thompson. We can talk about that. But, I mean, there is a lot going on this weekend.
No playoff baseball today.
No, that's right.
But what a finish last night in the lone game that went three.
Unbelievable. I mean, I didn't see the Polar Bears homer because it was 2-0. I flipped over and the Mets were going pretty quietly is the way it appeared.
I'll tell you,
last night,
as someone who watched a lot of Devin Williams in his limited action this year, he looked shaky from the first at bat, and I said, "Uh-oh." Like, this guy's been, because a lot of times with a closer,
you can tell very, very early on when they come in a ballgame.
You just need to rewatch, and granted, you'll have the benefit of hindsight. You rewatch that Lindor at bat, where Lindor fights through it, and eventually, I mean, it's evidence that this thing it's not in the bag quite yet, and sure enough, the Mets, it's an incredible statistic about Alonso's homer. That there has never been in the history of Major League Baseball in a winner-take-all playoff game, a Game 5 or a Game 7 that will decide the series, there has never been a go-ahead home run in the ninth inning before or later. There's never been a situation where a team – where someone in a winner-take-all has been the only time that's happened is to break ties. There's never been a situation where a team
a team trailing off.
Yes. Aaron Boone hit a home run in the 03 Yankees Red Sox series that was a home run to decide Game 7 of a winner take all series. That has happened, but that game was tied. It's never been a situation where a team trailing has hit a home run in that moment to take the lead. There's never been a lead change. I mean, I guess a tie to a lead is a – but you know what I mean, Bill? Like, there's never been a situation where the trailing team
– to bring a team from behind.
In the ninth inning has gone ahead in that fashion.
The most famous one that I was thinking of before you said to bring a team from behind was 1960 Bill Mazeroski's walk-off Game 7 homer against the Yankees.
Sure.
And that was the bottom of the ninth. Game 7.
I would think
the score, I think, was tied at 6 or not. Maybe it was tied at 9 or something like that.
Well, no, Gibson's homer didn't decide the series, but then
that was early
in the series. But there have been late home runs. Aaron Boone in the Yankee series, Mazeroski in 60. Now, Bobby Thompson would almost qualify.
Yeah, that wasn't postseason.
That wasn't the postseason.
That doesn't count as postseason when it's an extra game to determine.
No, they played three, right? That was the pennant, but they were three regular season games is how it was decided.
That walk-off won the pennant.
Yes,
The
Giants win the pennant, but it was not a – those were officially regular season games. If those had been deemed postseason games because they had a very limited postseason at the time. That technically would qualify
as
a World
Series. That was it.
Yeah.
You won your league. So, you played in the series.
So that would technically qualify as a, like, if that were the ALCS, you know what I mean, like of the, or the NLCS of the time. But that didn't happen. Those were just extra games to decide which team would represent each league in the World Series. So yeah, history last night from Pete Alonso. And in a situation where that might have been, had he made an out, that may have been his last at bat as a New York Met, facing free agency team that brought him up from Florida, drafted him, and he's played every at bat of his major league career has been for the Mets. And in that situation, he hits an incredible home run, and it forces. They used to have the rule in this round that you couldn't play a team from your own division in the DS and the ALDS and the NLDS before they expanded the playoffs to an extra wild card team, and now three wild card teams. Here we have three.
You've got three
division matchups. Three division matchups. So yep. Three teams that are. And how many times do you play? Is it 17?
The only team that is not playing a team from its own division is the Yankees, because they're playing the third team from the Central.
How many division games are you playing as a, like, how many times do you see a team in your division? Isn't it like 16 or 17?
No, I think it's down to like 13.
Okay, but still, I mean, it's more than 10. These teams are intimately
because
familiar.
Because the Braves and Mets play 13, remember?
Yeah. So I mean, these teams are really familiar with each other in three of these four playoff rounds, and it's going to be... Yeah, I think it's going to be really, really high stakes, fun baseball.
Yeah, we've got a little football to talk about as well. The resumption of the South's oldest series as Auburn traveling to Athens to take on the Georgia Bulldogs. And we've got Coach Don Dunn with us, well, along with Bill and Dan here in the studio. Don, how you doing today?
Great.
All right, you got to experience this one quite a few times.
Yes, very lucky to be 5-5 here at Auburn against them. And then, of course, we played them when we were at Ole Miss and had a big win at we beat them twice at Ole Miss in 4 years.
Wow. See, well, yeah. It's funny. I mean, well, until the last 7 years, that's the way this series has been over a century.
Right.
Georgia leads this series 64-56-8. And they've won the last seven straight because Auburn had actually gotten out to about a five-game lead before Georgia has dominated this over the last decade and a half plus.
They won 11, 12, 14, 15, and 16 before beginning this. I mean, they've won Is it 10 of the last 11?
It's like 16 of 19 now. Yeah, or something like 15 of 18 or 16 of 19.
But like you say, Bill, it's a great rival. Always a fun game. You know, we had a lot of kids from Georgia and you know, the coaches – in the past, looked like they swapped schools, Coach Dye and then Coach Dooley. But what a great rival, so close, the oldest in the South. And in the old days, you remember we played them the week before we played Alabama.
The game before Alabama. Fortunately, at times there would be an open day.
Right.
But it would always be that next to the last conference game. Yeah,
it is 10 of 11 since the 13 victory. Mm-hmm. So the prayer at Jordan-Hare in 13 and Georgia has – because if you think about it, Georgia has beaten Auburn every year since 2013.
That's right. Auburn got the regular season win in 17 and Georgia won the SEC title.
So, yeah, 13 the last time Auburn scored a victory over Georgia that Georgia did not ultimately avenge later in the season. So that's – I mean, it's a remarkable – stretch. And you're right, a rivalry that going into, I mean, rounding into what the victory in 2010 by Auburn, like it's even and it's advantage Auburn.
Oh, Auburn had the advantage. Auburn had gotten to about a five-game advantage.
Close to even, but advantage Auburn.
You know what? So what that means is it's probably time for another one of those crazy upsets. There have been some monumental upsets in this series, and that's what this one would be. It wouldn't be the biggest upset in this series, though. Auburn has knocked off more higher-ranked Georgia teams and has been as solid, or I don't know about the points, because I don't know what the point spreads were like back in, you know, the Frank Sinkwich Charlie Trippi days or whatever, when they had a Heisman Trophy winner and another guy that was a Heisman Trophy candidate, yeah. and they were the number one team in the country, and Auburn had lost a couple of ball games and was expected to just be destroyed, and they knock off Georgia. I think it was 14-13, if my history is correct. But, I mean, Auburn's teams in the 70s, people can remember back to and they don't speak fondly of the Doug Barfield days, but Auburn whipped up on some pretty good Georgia teams a couple of times back then. I was telling the guys here from on the line that were leaving, and they were asking about their favorite memory of the Auburn Georgia game. Obviously, mine goes back a whole lot farther, but I remember sitting in the end zone watching Buck Ballou be sacked for a safety as Georgia coming off their national championship. I mean, Auburn playing and just dominating Georgia to the shock of the world a couple of times there in the early 80s.
If you're under 30, I feel like your favorite Auburn memory
is going to be
of the Georgia
the prayer.
You get 13 or the win in 17.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it. I'm stealing from Patrick Garbin from UGA's Rivals affiliate, and he wrote this back in 2016. He did a deep dive on times when one of the two teams in the Auburn-Georgia rivalry has been a big favorite and what it means. There have been quite a few Georgia upsets.
Yes, there have.
Georgia won according to this article, Georgia won as a 20-point underdog in Auburn in 1970. Georgia won as a 10.5-point underdog
Auburn. That was Pat Sullivan his junior year.
Auburn Georgia won as a 10.5-point underdog in Auburn in 1986. Georgia won as a 10-point underdog in Auburn in 1996, and remarkably, Georgia won as an 11.5-point underdog in 2006. There was something about there was so maybe it's 2 years from now that Auburn's really got to worry about.
The one I was speaking of, yes, was 1942. I just remember obviously I even as old as I am, I wasn't around then. But Auburn beat number one Georgia 27-13. Auburn went in I read Auburn was a 4-touchdown underdog and won 27-13 over Georgia with supposedly the two best players in the nation on their team.
Auburn was also a 10-point favorite in 2016, and Georgia won that game, although the rivalry had flipped locations by then. Mm-hmm. So Georgia was a double-digit underdog that won outright against Auburn in 1986, 1996, 2006, and 2016.
Every year that ends in six, huh?
So. Four straight decades where that happened. Where Georgia.
So 2 years from now,
yes,
Auburn should be a favorite.
That's what I said.
Means Auburn's going to be favored in 2 years.
That's incredible. Four straight decades where the year that ends in six, Auburn is a double digit favorite to Georgia, and Georgia wins the game.
Wow.
Including the game with Matt Stafford as a true freshman.
Yep.
In 2006, where I think he showcased a little bit of what was going to make him. Yeah, he was the top quarterback coming out of high school,
right?
Eventual number one overall pick, Super Bowl champion, still playing in the NFL to this day.
Yeah, but he was an unproven inexperienced, unproven, but very highly high potential player at that time. Mm-hmm. Hey, the one that, and I heard T-Bone talking about this one. He said it was his favorite because of the post game. Wasn't anybody's favorite because of the game. It's when Georgia came in without their starting quarterback and knocked off Auburn back in. When you were talking about 86, that was the hose game. The 1986 game was the game when Georgia came in. Jackson was their starting quarterback. He didn't play. Wayne Johnson came in as the starting quarterback. Columbus native came in, was supposed to be nothing but a drop back passer. And he did throw it, but he ran, and Georgia beat Auburn 20-16. And then following the game, the sprinklers, Georgia fans went down to try to get some of the Auburn hedge and go onto the field. And Auburn turned the sprinklers, the heavy duty sprinklers on the Georgia fans, and then hosed up into the stands as well. And Georgia fans have never, I think that was people, Auburn fans will say 2007 was the start of some bad feelings between Auburn and Georgia. Georgia started having those feelings in 1986 when Auburn turned the hoses on the dogs.
Auburn, similar note from the UGA Rivals article that I'm cribbing a lot of this from. Auburn in Athens from 76 to 02 won 11 of the 13 games.
Yeah, and I told you, I guess I was
a remarkable stretch.
I may have been at all of those games. And the problem is they've only won once since in Athens.
That's right, 05. And we've got the defensive line coach of the team that pulled off. Let me ask you.
Let's do that after break so we can sort of stay on schedule. We'll let you know. We'd love for you to join us. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar.
It's Friday, and in hour number one on Friday, usually.
Yeah, he texted me earlier, and he's at the emergency room with his mom.
Okay.
So our thoughts and prayers going out to Barrett Salee. So he won't be able to join us this afternoon. Yeah, we could get a really good perspective from him. He's a Georgia native who went to Auburn and is now living, you know, over there in Atlanta. So I'm sure we could get some things from him. But yeah, he has more important things right now. So we'll open up the phone lines for you. You can also text us.
334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
We will get to our first break. Come on in and join us here on the Friday Drive.
Hey, this is Kevin Tudhope, owner of the UPS store at Auburn Bank. I want to welcome all the students back to the Plains. With everyone moving and all the hustle.
211-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. 21 minutes after 4 o'clock. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. And we'd love to hear from you. And let's get to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Bill is up first. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. Well, I'll tell you, I'm as disappointed as anybody with the we're at in the one loss category and that this, that, and the other. But I'm going to Athens tomorrow. I'm going to support that team. I think we're close. It hasn't been the season we thought. We've just made too many mistakes. But I'm going over it. I'm going to support those kids and that that program, and not saying anybody's not going, that isn't, but I'm going, and I'll I really believe that we're close, and I really believe we're close. We just haven't gotten over that proverbial hump yet.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, there are a lot of numbers that I think would surprise an awful lot of folks at how effective Auburn has been at moving the ball. The defense has been pretty darn solid. It just seems like thus far this year, if something's going to go wrong, it seems to go wrong at a critical time where it really, I mean, not that you can afford to have turnovers or penalties all the time, but it seems like there have just been some critical mistakes at the most or at the least opportune time, if you will.
And I think, look, some of the offensive statistics are a little bit inflated by how Auburn performed against Alabama A&M and New Mexico. But at the same time, there are numbers that would indicate, even if you isolate Cal, Arkansas, and Oklahoma, especially Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah. Even if you take out the last series against Oklahoma, Auburn moved the ball better against Oklahoma than anybody they played this year. And that includes Tennessee.
Sure. No, I think there are reasons to believe this offense can continue to improve. I think they're better. I think the offense was much better against, you know, as far as improvement and development, because those are words we hear a lot. I think the Auburn offense was much better against Oklahoma than it was against Cal. Like there's development and improvement right there, and I think Oklahoma is a much better defense than Cal. I know Auburn lost both games, and so you're looking for silver lining and moral victory and things like that. But I would argue absolutely that Auburn's offense performed better against Oklahoma than it did against Cal, and so it's like there's some growth and some development right there. Did they still make mistakes that turned a winnable game into a loss? Sure. And they have to avoid that whenever possible this season and moving forward. But, you know, I've been asked, project wins and losses and things like that. And, you know, I don't know how this thing's going to turn out. I think Auburn can win at least one of these road games in October. Like, I think 1-2 in the three road games in October is absolutely on the table, especially if the growth in this offense continues. I think all three of the home games in November are winnable football games. Vanderbilt, ULM, and Texas A&M. And if you win, if you go 1-3 on the road this season in conference, and you win your next three home games, you're 6-6 and going to a bowl game and feeling pretty good about turning 2-3 into 6-6 and beating one of these teams in October and beating Texas A&M and Vanderbilt at home in November. So I still think there are things to play for this year. I think that there are reasons to believe Auburn's got a puncher's chance or more in one of these games in October.
Mm-hmm.
I won't be, you know what? An Auburn win tomorrow would surprise me a lot. It would stun me. However, Auburn played this team close last year in Auburn, and I think there's reason to believe this is a better Auburn team.
And I don't think Georgia is as good.
And so I think that if this game's close into the second half, I would probably expect Georgia to pull away and be the better, deeper, fresher team in the fourth quarter. But, you know, if Auburn can build a lead going into that fourth quarter, Georgia might still have some work to do. But I think this game could, if Georgia is lights out to begin the game, you know,
that's a huge problem, and that's something they haven't been all year.
Yeah, right. If you get a hot start from Georgia and a slow start from Auburn, then this thing could get ugly. But in the meantime, if Auburn, like, as long as Auburn can, and like we always say with upsets, Bill, the longer the underdog hangs in there,
mm-hmm,
the more uncomfortable it gets on the side of the favorite. We saw it, I think, in both of the upset losses in Auburn this season. I think the longer Cal and Arkansas had a lead or had some control of the game, it made things increased the tension everywhere on that sideline. Coach, you can probably speak to both sides of that, being the team pulling off the upset and seeing the other team tighten up. Or being the one trying to put out the fire on your own sideline and saying you're trying to stop the upset jitters from spreading to the entire team, or something like that. But no, I think if Auburn can make things uncomfortable, the longer tomorrow is close.
Yeah, I think three things. Number one, like we've talked, run the football, keep their offense off the field. We've done a great job of running the ball. And they're not, like Bill said, Georgia's not great like they have been. They have some flaws.
They're extremely talented. But,
yes.
But, I mean, they haven't run the ball very well this year.
Right.
They haven't they haven't had great success defending the pass at times this year.
Exactly.
I mean, they show that they have some weaknesses.
Right. And then I think time of possession, which relates to run the football, and, you know, the old what is it? The thing in the room is the turnovers. If we can eliminate, you know, turnovers, if, you know, it's a big word, but I really feel good about this game. Another thing, when the fans are against you, everybody's disappointed, sometimes it is so great to go on the road.
Does it feel like maybe there's a little bit of pressure lifted off of you when you're not,
yes,
not at home when things you are get, when
you
things
get,
are struggling?
It's just you. It's you, your teammates, and your coaches. You're in that hotel. You're in the room with your roommate. You know, first time really traveling. You're on the bus. I'm sure they bust.
You know where I can relate this one to? Mm-hmm. A week ago in Oxford.
Right.
Kentucky, you know, they'd gotten blasted by South Carolina. They almost beat Georgia. Felt like they had Georgia.
Right.
I mean, Kentucky was feeling very much the way Auburn is feeling right now. Yeah. Because they led the whole game.
Yep.
And then Georgia scored late and beat them by a point.
Right.
And then who gave Kentucky a shot last week in Oxford?
No one. But, you know,
So, getting on the road, I can see that where they go play looser.
It's just something different about it. It's just like us against the world. You know, they're going to be excited. Our kids are going to be excited. It's a great rivalry. But sometimes it's good to get away from your fans. I know it sounds crazy. The media, you know, all the students on campus, they hear it everywhere. Just it's us against the world. Let's go over there. And I think
criticizing you when you're on the road are the other team, or the other guys.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you don't have your own. Don't have to worry about your people coming after.
You know what Auburn could do. The game that comes to mind for me, Coach, and I would love your memories of this. Yellowhammer, we'll get to you in a sec. But when Auburn went to Tuscaloosa in 2004, as a road game. Mm-hmm. But as a big favorite, going there, and the longer that game was close, the more uncomfortable it felt.
Scared to death.
On the Auburns. And I just feel like if Auburn can – I mean, the stakes for Georgia, having lost the game in Tuscaloosa, knowing they still have to go to Austin, to Oxford, mm-hmm. Tennessee's still on the schedule coming to Athens.
Right.
They cannot.
No, they can't.
It feels like they cannot lose tomorrow and make the playoff. It feels like it is the gauntlet they would have to run, probably without losing, to make the playoff if Auburn pulls off the upset tomorrow is a real challenge. And then you're talking about a team as talented as Georgia missing the playoff 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like a team as good as Georgia.
Bad enough if you miss a 4-team playoff. If Georgia misses the 12-team
playoff,
they'll jump off
the bridge.
I just know. So I think the more Auburn can keep it close tomorrow, like the more, I mean, the word that comes to mind is panic. Like the more it's gonna feel like a bit of a panic on the Georgia sideline, and that's something and that's something if Georgia can jump out to an early lead, they can hold off.
Yeah.
If Auburn jumps out to something like an early lead, now you're starting to talk about stuff like that. You know, now you're starting to have those thoughts in your head, mm-hmm. and now you're starting to have that 2004 Iron Bowl stomach ache.
Right.
That you probably remember.
Yeah, behind at halftime, and, you know, we're undefeated. The whole season's going down the drain. And, you know, they got better and better as the game went on in the first half. We couldn't do anything, if you remember. And we were behind. But I just feel good.
That team spoils the 2004 season too, right? Yeah. Like if that's the game that couldn't
be worse.
No.
Thank goodness it wasn't.
Thank the football gods. Yeah. But tomorrow, I'm telling you, I feel really good. And I talked to Coach today, Bledsoe, and he talked about when we went up there in 2000. Well, anyway, we beat him up there early. In Coach Tuberville's
one maybe?
Yeah. And I can't remember, but we were not expected to do anything. And we were not having a great season. So, yeah, I feel good about it. And it's a crazy rivalry. Bill, if you remember, Chuck and I always talked about the Georgia game. The week of the Georgia game, the crazy stuff that mm-hmm. happened, the time we got hit on the way home in Chuck's old van, spent the night in the fire station. I still have my coaching gear on.
Trips to and from Athens
always crazy.
Always, it seems like always memorable, Dan. Just beware.
Oh, I know.
Beware as you head over. Because you haven't been over since 2005, right?
2007. Blackout. 2007, Blackout was my last
game. Dan hasn't been since then. So it's your fault that all this started.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Actually, so 2005, I had a separate engagement that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm driving through the Georgia wilderness trying to catch the game on the Georgia radio. No cell service.
Right.
And I'm flipping channels trying to find, and I finally find it. And Brandon Cox drops back to pass on fourth down, and we lose the signal. And there's static everywhere, and then he comes back maybe 2-3 minutes later. Good luck trying to figure out what happened.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you're listening to the Georgia network. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. All right. Let's get to Yellowhammer before we get to our bottom of the hour break. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Who's this? Hey, afternoon. Well, I got three things. Thing one, we could safely assume Georgia has one of the best offensive lines in the country. Thing two,
they're maybe not as good as they were. I mean, they're very talented, but they're I don't think they're as good as they were a year ago.
Okay. Anyway, thing two, they showed they can pass pretty good against Alabama.
They've got one of the more highly touted, you know, draft eligible quarterbacks in the country in Carson Beck. Yes,
maybe the first overall pick.
Yeah, maybe
in the 25 draft.
Struggled last week. Turned it over four times.
Well, thing three, the more pressure you can put on a quarterback, the easier it is for the poor old guys in the secondary. But on the other hand, they can negate that if their quarterback is mobile enough and can escape that kind of thing.
He's not much of a threat running the ball. He's pretty athletic, but I mean, he would rather stay behind the line of scrimmage and pass.
Well, anyway, then I'm just wondering what kind of comments you might have about our defensive approach against their offense.
Appreciate it, Yellowhammer. I think the first thing, as crazy as it sounds, because Georgia has struggled running the ball, you got to make sure they don't run the ball.
Right.
I mean, keeping a team one-dimensional, even if it's the dimension that they're better at, is better than not, you know, than being concerned with all phases of the game. So I think the first thing is Auburn's got to make sure that they don't get gashed with the running game. And then as he said, I mean, Auburn's going to have to come up with some way of putting pressure on Carson.
Right. I agree, Bill. You got to stop the run, number one thing. But somehow get us some turnovers. Make them go the long field. Don't give them a short field. And don't give up the big home run. If we can do those things, keep it in front of us. And all those things, I think, goes back to our offense being able to run the football. And I think we can run the ball on them and keep them off the field. That's the best defense. Is us having the ball.
As far as Carson Beck, you know, his pro prospects and things like that, it feels like Carson Beck, Shedeur Sanders, Jalen Milroe, Quinn Ewers, Cam Ward are probably like the quarterbacks vying to be
taken
really early. Some folks would put Drew Alter from Penn State in that conversation. I'd be interested to see how the NFL views the Liberty quarterback, Salters, who's having a strong start to the year. I also wonder if he's going to go in the portal in December and maybe take a year.
A lot of folks are talking about that.
A lot of folks wonder if he would be a quarterback that would, you know, go into the portal and maybe try his luck against a major conference competition for a year and then try his pro prospects after that. Like, I mean, Cam Ward played 2 years at the major conference level before going to the NFL. He was at Washington State last year, but I think some folks look at that as, I mean, I think NFL team,
more,
I think
proof.
NFL teams, I think, are worried about if you didn't play against major conference competition now. If you're a very good Sun Belt quarterback, or if you're a very good Conference USA quarterback, is the jump to the NFL going to be really, really tough for you, especially now that you're expected to contribute early as a high draft pick? And so I can understand why NFL teams would say, you know what, give it a year in the SEC. Maybe give it a year in the Big Ten, and then we'll have some film on you against athletes like that.
Yeah, and with the portal, you're going to make good money.
And there's also that.
Yeah,
that is
so
exactly
that's going
right.
to be something that's, you know, I would say yes.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Who have we got up? Is it Brett?
We got Brett on the
line.
Okay,
Brett, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Friday Drive.
Or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Let's get right back to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Brett is up next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. I think the game that was done was talking about where we weren't supposed to do anything up there against was the 99 Ronnie Daniels game.
Yes.
2001 would have been the Cadillac.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yep.
They kept single covering Ronnie Daniels.
Yep.
And Ben just kept, okay.
Yeah, I forgot.
Here's another
that.
Long pass. Goodbye.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. And Bill, you mentioned sitting there in the end zone watching Ballou get hit in the
right,
in the end zone.
Right down in front of us. We're on those cheap wood stands that they yep, used to have there yep. in Athens.
That game was the first time my folks ever let me and a buddy of mine go to an away game. And that was 79. That's when Trotman, mm-hmm. Cribs, and Brooks just ran up down the field.
Just
do you remember the who came in to replace Blue when he tore up his ankle?
Well, they had that Valdosta pipeline. It wasn't Lastinger, was it?
It was Jeff Fibern.
Oh, yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Speaking of Auburn, Georgia, the Auburn,
yeah,
Georgia crossover.
It was pretty good, but anyway, that might be one of my best memories ever, going to that game, especially I was 11th grade, you know, going out of town game. But other thing, I've heard a lot of people say we need to give it to Hunter 25 times, and that's good if it's working early and all, but don't you think Kirby's going to stack it where they stop the run and make Thorn do something?
I'm sure that's the plan for Georgia, absolutely.
Oh, I'm not even. I was okay with. I think a lot of the. I mean, I guess there are, you know, some red zone occasions where I would have liked to see Hunter get the ball more. And I think when Auburn was trying to protect the lead at the end, but I think Thorn. I was far more concerned last year with the challenge of, oh, they're going to stack the box and dare Thorn and these receivers to do something. Like I think defenses in general. Like I think it's a greater risk to take that strategy against Auburn this year than it was last year. Even if Auburn threw some interceptions against Cal and a crucial one late against Oklahoma.
Yeah, well, I believe Auburn's going to have to throw on first down a good bit to stay ahead of the chains.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Line up, run it right at them. I ain't be in trouble.
Hey,
there.
Brent, do you remember?
Anyway,
And long developing pass plays on first down run the risk of sacks that kill the drive,
right.
I think the more you throw downfield, the more risk there is of catastrophe too against a team like Georgia. Although, you know, people would say Alabama was able to throw downfield on
they did over and over again. No, Brett, I was gonna just wondering if you recalled. I could ask my son Scott, but he's probably got other things on his mind right now. As
we got an update there.
Well, she's in the early stages of labor is what we hear. But the first game first road game that my older son went to was in Athens, and it was the coldest. I mean, it seemed like it was always cold when you went to Athens for these late season games. Yeah, it was so cold. We bought extra clothing on the way. It got colder and colder as we got there.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I've ever been much colder at a ball game than I was there at that ball game.
If Auburn knocked Hines Ward down one time, they knocked him down 23.
Yep.
Because he took a pounding, but he played a great game.
No kidding.
But anyway, Auburn won. Y'all have a great day.
Yep. Thanks.
Well, that's the way it used to be. You just felt like, oh, you're going. You got a great shot when you're on the road,
right,
in this series. It's time. Yeah, it's time for that to get turned back around.
Yep.
334-321-1390. And speaking of the Georgia game, bumped into Curtis and Teresa Sides last week, heading into the ball game, and they mentioned that it was Curtis's 499th consecutive game.
Wow.
They're going to Athens this week. That will be his 500th. And, I mean, he's struggling a little these days. And so that is great that he will be there for his 500th consecutive Auburn game over in Athens.
That's unbelievable.
It's a piece of the sort of the tail end of the Bowden era for Auburn. But it's the 97 game is when Auburn had just been shut out by Mississippi State,
mm-hmm,
a week earlier, and Auburn and Damian Craig go to Athens. I think Georgia had been the best defense in the league to that point. Auburn puts up 45 points, runs the ball.
I don't know how many times through this series I recall Auburn going into the Georgia game. And remember, folks, this used to be like game number 9 or 10 of the season.
Right.
When it was an 11-game season, it'd be game number 9 or 10. When it was a 12-game season, it'd be game number 10 or 11. And Georgia would invariably be leading the SEC in rushing defense. And Auburn could somehow run the ball against them.
Auburn had run for 46 yards. I'm reading from the New York Times game story about this game. Auburn had run for 46 yards in its previous three games and ranked last in the SEC with a season average of 75.6 yards.
Who was Auburn's leading rusher? I think it was Rusty
game.
Williams. I mean, Auburn didn't have a prolific running game.
So Auburn,
they had Damian Craig.
Bowden used the extra time to make drastic changes to his offense. Auburn ran 43 times for 159 yards and scored 5 rushing touchdowns. DeMontre Carter had 93
DeMontre.
Yards.
For Pensacola.
Damian Craig also added to some of that as well. Auburn, so I mean, there's some crazy things.
Great moments. You go from both teams, and a lot of them have come on the road.
You get shut out and turn around a week later and go to a top 10 team that was leading the conference in defense and completely changing what you had done so far. You go from being a pass happy offense to an offense that decides to really lean on the most dangerous parts of your ground game, and you scored a decisive victory, and a shocking upset too.
Yeah, that was the year after the 4 overtime game that Georgia won in Auburn. I'm looking at just. This is cool when you go into, I don't know if this was Wikipedia or it's just
Mike Bobo quarterback
story on the Deep South's oldest rivalry. Look at how the colors alternate red and blue,
yeah.
And it's so many of the times it was on the road. We'd love to hear from you. You know, if you've got some memories of this or your thoughts on this weekend's game or anything else sports-wise, come on in and join us. We'll get to our final break of hour number one.
There was a 20-year stretch in this rivalry where the road team won 15 of 20 between, I think
it was
very tough. 70s into the late 90s.
Yeah, it was crazy. I think we won 3 over there, or maybe 4. I know we won 3. But yeah, it was crazy how that record.
You won 91, you won 99, 2001, 2005.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, we'll get to that final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Friday Drive.
If you truly care about your feet and want to make them happy, check out
the Friday Drive. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn, and let's get back to the Drive hotline. And John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. I had a question for the coach there.
Yes, sir.
Why is it that Auburn insists on playing a three-man front on defense? Is it lack of personnel? Because Auburn has traditionally used a four-man front, if not a 5-0 on the goal line, you know. But we have repeatedly give up pass after pass on third down with a three-man front, and I just don't understand why we stay in that formation.
You know, I don't know the answer to that other than that's probably Coach Durkin's philosophy and what he believes in, but I'm 100% with you. Everywhere I ever coached, we were probably 98% of the time in a four-man front. So I'm with you on that. It's so hard to get to the quarterback with three men rushing.
Well, no, but if I sort of understand. I mean, the difference between lining up in a three-man front and only bringing three on the pass rush, though, is different, right? I mean, if you're talking about third and long.
Yeah, because like, a lot of the time Auburn may look like they're in a three-man front, but their other defensive end has got his hand up and is moving a little.
Yeah, I think the wisdom behind doing stuff like that on third and long is that you want more fast pass rushers out there and fewer.
Yeah, and then you'd probably get another sub in like another nickel.
Yeah, you could either bring in another defensive back, or you can bring more than three pass rushers, even if you only have three
from off the line.
There have been times when Auburn has only brought three on third and long too, and I think there wasn't as much of that against Oklahoma.
No,
I think Auburn also took a unique approach because they didn't really think Oklahoma was very conservative with the back with the new quarterback. I likened it to how Auburn had used Robbie Ashford at times over the previous 2 years, where it felt like they really didn't want him challenging the coverage. You know, very often, like you could throw to wide open guys, but other than that, it was more of a conservative, live to punt, run the ball first, you know, sort of approach. And I don't know how many more times Auburn's going to face offenses like that. So it's going to be. I mean, it is Auburn's secondary against the Georgia receivers is huge tomorrow. Like it's, you know, for all the focus on. How's Auburn going to score and you know how's the Georgia run game going to go? Like it is, you know, if Georgia's receivers are you know consistently winning their matchups big, it could feel like a one-sided victory.
Yeah, I'm afraid if they stay in a three-man front against Carson Beck, he'll throw for 500 plus yards. because he's pretty accurate. When
Auburn's got to – they've got to put some pressure up front with the defensive line. First thing I got to do is stop the run, but then they've definitely got to be able to pressure Carson Beck.
Yeah, the notion of just bringing three consistently and sitting back eight, you know, I don't think that's going to
– This is not the guy – this is definitely not a guy you want to do that
against.
Other than the turnovers, I've been pleased with the offense. I know that's kind of hard to say because they're hand in glove, but and you can say if it weren't for the turnovers, we should be undefeated, which we should. But hopefully, only thing I can do is hope they continue to improve. And like I said, it's been my team for the past 40 years, and they'll remain my team. But it's been a struggle this year.
Well, it's been frustrating, no question. Hey, thanks for the call, John.
Thank you.
All right, we will get to our top of the hour break. We're halfway done.
I would think what's just to piggyback off John's point there, but I would think what's been the most frustrating thing is that you haven't necessarily seen regression from last year in key spots. You've actually seen progress, but at the same time, it hasn't been enough to close out wins.
Yep. All right, right back with hour number two here on the Friday Drive.
Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Friday Drive. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio on the eve of Auburn, Georgia. Hey, huge one tonight. I mean, it's like the mini Auburn, Georgia with Auburn High and Central.
Wow.
Tonight over at Central, the number one and two teams in the state of Alabama in 7A.
I hope you got a ticket and you're already there.
Man, no kidding. It's always tough over there.
Yes.
Always tough over there. But you can hear the action starting at 6:30 over on Wings 94.3 Kick at 7 o'clock. Meanwhile, Lee Scott in action.
Yep.
Is it Daveville, I believe? They've got same time and kickoff at 7 on AU 100.
And a couple of decent college games tonight. You got Houston and TCU. Syracuse at UNLV, which should be interesting, and Michigan State at Oregon.
Wow.
Tonight, Friday night, which again.
Conference game.
Again, shouldn't play.
Michigan State at Oregon.
Big Ten football on Fox every Friday night this season. That's sort of, you know, they
I'll say it again.
TV window.
I don't like playing on high school nights.
Nope. All right, we'd love to hear from you. We've got callers holding on the Drive hotline, which is sponsored by Skybar. Yeah, we've got one line open, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast.
Let's get to the hotline. Is it Terry up first?
Terry.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
How you doing, bud?
Hey, Terry.
How odd is it to say Michigan State, Oregon is a conference game?
Yeah, really.
It's crazy.
We're getting over. I mean, Miami's at Cal this weekend in a key ACC showdown.
Is game day going to Cal?
Game day's in Berkeley.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Going to be, what, 5 a.m. in Berkeley when they get started?
They won't care. They'll still be in the trees.
Foggy.
Naked.
Yeah. The drum circles be going on.
The smell of
and the question I got for you earlier, a conference barbecue. Earlier today, guys, if Peyton Thorne plays a game tomorrow and they're 2-4, do they start pulling the plug and go with the younger guys?
I think it depends on how the difference between Peyton Thorne and what they think they would get from the next guy up, Terry. Like, if they think it's close, that's one thing. But the sense I get right now is that I don't think the belief internally is that it's close between what you get from Peyton Thorne and what you would get from Hank Brown. Like, that's sort of where – and I think what we saw against Hank against Arkansas is evidence of that. Largely, even though it was only his first half against an SEC opponent ever. But no, I think you would need to get later in the season to start making decisions like that, unless Peyton's play is a big reason why you're struggling in October, which, you know, I don't think, like, I think there were bigger culprits than Peyton's play against Oklahoma. Like I don't think you have another quarterback on the team that would have played as well against Oklahoma as Peyton does, as Peyton did. So I think it's tougher to make that decision right now. When you get closer to the end of the season, maybe. But I still think you have a lot to lose by having an offense that's performed pretty well, even with a 2-3 record. I think risking that offense cratering because you wanted to make a quarterback change just for the sake of change could be a mistake.
So you would wait till later season if you're 2-4.
I would probably
six games of the season. That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
I think that if you think that there's another quarterback on the team that can approximate Peyton Thorne's performance and he's got eligibility remaining, that's one thing. If you don't, I don't think you just go to the next quarterback up because he's got eligibility remaining, even if you don't think he's going to play as well as Peyton does.
I've never
understood the three interception thing with Hank Brown, because last time I checked, he had to pass three to get to six.
Yeah, and
I never understood that. He's got to throw a whole lot more. Yeah, he made some mistakes. I realize that.
Yeah, I think that it's. I would not rule out the possibility that Hank could be a good college quarterback someday. I also feel like there's a pretty healthy gap right now as far as what you get from Peyton and what you would get from Hank.
And before you make a change, Terry, I think you've got to see how tomorrow plays out. I still think Auburn has a chance to win at least one of these road games here in the month of October. And if you do that, you've got a chance to improve on last year's record.
We were talking about it a little bit during the break, Terry. There are fans, and it's fine if you subscribe to this. There are fans who think Hank would give the team a better chance to win right now than Peyton Thorne does. They're watching a different game than me. Like, honestly, like the folks who think that you would make a change right now from Peyton to Hank and improve Auburn's chances of winning in these games they've got coming up, that's just it's alien to me as far as what I've seen these last couple of weeks.
Well, I don't know about y'all, but I could excuse three interceptions by a freshman and six interceptions by a redshirt senior.
Well, the three interceptions have come in how many attempts as compared to the six?
True. And then you could have a situation, and I believe this is going to happen. I believe there's a possibility this could happen. Auburn could be 5-6 going into the Iron Bowl and Walker Whiteman being the quarterback. And then you have a controversy between Walker and White Knight. That's your best case scenario, quite honestly, I think.
Well, I think next year is going to be really interesting because Peyton won't be back. And
right.
Walker White and Deuce Knight are very talented but unfinished products. So I think it's going to be really interesting to watch. There's going to be some more experience,
if you're,
I'm sure. That's
if your quarterback options next spring are Walker White, Hank Brown, and Deuce Knight, I would hope that either Walker or Hank played extremely well down the stretch in the final six games of this season, because otherwise you're really going into a must-win season with three guys who haven't shown you anything as college football quarterbacks. I think I would almost guarantee, Terry, that unless you get commanding, really impressive performances from Hank Brown and or Walker White down the stretch this season, Hugh Freeze and the Auburn team will be shopping at the top of the market for a transfer in December and bringing in whoever.
I kind of forgot about.
Yeah,
I do know Deuce Knight's good, but that guy was a stud coming out of high school. And the University of Arkansas would be glad to have him.
And Walker, I mean, Hugh Freeze has complimented Walker White for running the scout team as he's still trying to learn the offense and learn reading defense.
2025 is a super high-stakes season for Hugh Freeze, though, and I think he's going to have to go in there with experience at the quarterback position. They need to be shopping at the top of the transfer portal market in December.
It's going to be interesting to see who's there. I don't know that there'll be as big names this coming year as there were this year.
We'll see. And that's another reason. That's another reason why you need to be playing the best possible players right now, because it's going to be easier to lure a transfer in if you're 6-6 and an impressive offense than it will be if you're 3-9 because you're playing a young quarterback just for the sake of playing a quarterback. You need to be putting on the best show possible to show not just high school recruits, but also transfers, that this is a place on the verge of playing well. And I think if you play a lesser quarterback just because he's young, I think you damage that message.
Yeah, you guys have a great weekend.
Appreciate it, Terry.
Thanks.
334-321-1390. Who have we got next?
We got, I think Jeremy is next up. What's up, Jeremy?
Yeah, what's up, guys? Hey, not what I was going to call about. We'll get to it in a second. if you had Arch Manning on your team and you knew with 1,000% certainty he was going to be your next starting quarterback, sure. We don't have that right now. You don't know who the next guy is going to be. If you've got a chance to get to a bowl game, do it. And whichever guy's going to give you the best shot to do that, that's the guy you better play.
Yeah, and something that I think a lot of people don't realize, there's a difference in some of these five-star quarterbacks. Some of them are there because they test off the chart, but they're not finished. Arch Manning is, I mean, look at the bloodline. I mean, he has been being coached and learning to play quarterback since he could walk. Some of these other guys may have been playing quarterback, but they haven't had the opportunities of the coaching and gotten the experience that these guys have. I mean, you read
and Arch Manning redshirted.
He redshirted. That's right.
He redshirted.
And
you
read, and guys, even down to the competition that they play against in high school. Like you're not seeing that. You don't know. And until these guys show up on campus, and even then, until you roll them out there on a Saturday against grown men, you don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you read the – I talked about this a little yesterday. You read the reviews on Deuce Knight, and they're very they're not the same thing, but you hear some of the similar things about the sky-high ceiling that there is, but there's a way to go. But scouts love what they see and the tools that he has. It's the same as we heard with Walker White. But that doesn't mean they're ready to be playing.
You're scouting his arm.
Right.
You're scouting his arm, his athletic
ability, right, his size. But that doesn't mean they're ready to be thrown into the SEC.
Right. Next thing, that's like I said, that's not even why I wanted to call. Question for Coach Dunn. I know for me growing up, watching Georgia and Tennessee play Auburn, like those were the most fun games for me.
Mm-hmm.
It always seemed like they were taking turns ruining each other's seasons. For Coach Dunn, whether it was as a player, as a coach, who was the most fun team you played against, coached against, whatever? Like, you went into a week and said, you know what, win or lose, this is going to be fun.
I think you're exactly right. You hit the nail on the head. I would say Alabama and Georgia. And there's nothing like it. And when you beat them, there's nothing like that. And when you lose, there's no bad feeling like that. But I agree. And, you know, I was a GA at Tennessee, so I got to see that old-time Alabama-Tennessee rivalry. And Auburn. Auburn came into Knoxville and kicked our butts. And Coach Dye, and I've said this before, and Coach Majors were great friends, and they would visit each other. And we hated that because they were going to critique how we coached. And it wasn't fun after either one of them left. But I would say those games, Alabama and Georgia, and going to Georgia, I always loved to go to Georgia for some reason, and Bill's mentioned that. It's been a crazy rivalry. I mean, and I feel good about our team, and I mentioned it earlier. They're going to group together. It's just them against the world. They don't have to worry about too much, you know, that goes on when you play at home. There's too many distractions.
Good job, Coach. Thank you now.
Appreciate it, Jeremy. Good hearing from you. 334-321 1390. We'd love to hear from you here on the Friday Drive.
Yeah, don't forget, tomorrow, Auburn, Georgia. You can catch it on Wings 94.3 here in the Auburn-Opelika area. First time Andy and the team takes the show on the road.
That's right.
This season. But we'll have all the pregame festivities on Wings 94.3 leading up to kickoff tomorrow. 2:30 Central Time,
2:45.
It seems funny not saying time. On CBS, right?
No, this one's on is it ABC?
Yeah.
Yes.
ABC for the second of three SEC games, I believe they will be airing on that network tomorrow as Auburn and Georgia lock up. And it's crazy to think, Coach. We were talking about it a little bit on the earlier this week on the show, but as things stand now, we don't know the future of this rivalry after 2025. These two, these two teams.
I don't even want to think about it.
I just can't. I have very little. I'm not going to say no doubt, but I've very little doubt that the SEC is going to go to a 9-game schedule, and Auburn, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee will be able to. be saved.
It was, you know, one of the Georgia guys we were talking to on the Observer podcast made the point, though, where, I mean, untangling from some of these non-conference games is messy enough that you probably want as much notice as possible to go to a ninth game. And if they, you know, if they flirt with, like, the start of the 25 season, it's going to be tough to snap your fingers.
Yeah, and, you
like,
know,
it probably needs to happen in the next six to 9 months.
I think it would happen before the spring meetings of 25.
If you go into summer, fall 2025 with a, you know, with uncertainty there, I think you can start to assume that it's the other thing, which is not what we want to imagine.
No, but that's, but that's an 8-game. Other conferences, the other power conferences, they've got some concerns as well. So I don't think it'll be terribly hard. But you're right; you need a year and a half or so to try to be able to get things lined up.
You need some notice, and presumably, if the SEC doesn't go to an 8-game or to a 9-game schedule, then Auburn's schedule in 2026. I imagine Auburn's schedule in 26 in that situation would be Alabama
and everybody else, and that the other haven't played.
And the 7 SEC teams that Auburn is not playing this year and, in the conference: Texas,
2 years,
Texas, Tennessee, LSU,
Ooh.
the two Mississippi schools,
State.
South Carolina, and Florida would be the other 7 teams on the schedule in that situation, and it would be that's a weird, odd schedule. But if I mean, I think a lot of teams in the league are facing. I mean, Georgia's got
you get LSU and the two Mississippi schools back who you haven't been playing.
You would get Texas, which right. I think would be exciting to a lot of people. You'd get Florida back, which I think would be exciting.
You'd
get to
Florida
folks
and Tennessee, lot of old, you know, old time Auburn.
No, it's not.
Yep.
It's a fine schedule, and honestly, yep. I mean, it's a. I mean, they wanted to preserve the Auburn-Georgia rivalry, clearly. But, like, other than that, like, it felt like it was a coin flip as far as whether or not you were going to play any of those teams this year or not. I mean, Auburn drew Oklahoma, which we were talking about. You know, that felt like it would be a, you know, really sort of special.
Well, we thought it would be a winnable game, and it was.
Yeah.
But they just didn't win. All right, hour number two of the drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Come on in and join us. We'll get to our first break here in hour number two of the Friday Drive.
Sip, spike, put. Step up your game.
Back into the drive, 20 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Friday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Coach Dunn here in the studio, and let's get right back to the drive hotline. Spectre is next. Hey, Spectre.
Hey, Spectre.
Hey, guys. Listen, I got two questions. One's on football, one's on NASCAR, okay? I heard this maybe a day ago, maybe 2 days ago, about Auburn's offensive team from last year and their offensive team of this year. And which team had the better offense up to 5 games?
Statistically, I believe, let's see.
What are you using? Scoring offense? Are you using yards? Using yards per play? What's your methodology?
Well, I'm using one loss.
Oh, well, one loss. It was.
Well, that doesn't measure an offense, does it?
Offensively, Auburn's moving the ball better. They are much higher rated in the Southeastern Conference than they were pretty much in just about every category offensively this year.
Yeah. Well, I think that was the point when somebody brought it up, that saying that why is last year's team 3-2 and this year's team is 2-3 if this year's team is a better offense than last year?
Auburn has turned the ball over, and the turnover ratio, the turnover margin this year is
much
last.
Worse than, we're last than it in was the SEC in turnovers.
Hey, speaking of those turnovers, how many pick sixes have we got this year? Just one?
I think the only pick six is the Oklahoma one.
Right.
Yeah, okay. All right, I got a on NASCAR, Dan.
What's up?
you know your guy's out of there, right?
Keys is done?
He's out of the playoffs.
Okay, yeah. who's still, like, who are your favorites to win this thing?
Well, let's see, Logano, Larson, and let's see.
Is it Dega weekend?
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's Dega weekend. Look at me for now. How about me knowing that? I didn't even check my phone. Specter?
Yeah, is Justin going? Is Justin going to the track?
No, Ferg's got a music festival in Georgia this weekend, and then he's also going to the to the Georgia game. So he's been spending the weekend in Atlanta.
Yeah, this is the round of 12, and there's two races: Talladega and then Charlotte next week after next, and four drivers will be eliminated after Charlotte, and then it'll be the round of 8.
Specter, I want to go back to the football point real quick before you dive deeper into the NASCAR. I do think that both things, like, yes, it's true that Auburn, they should be better than 2-3, and they probably made critical mistakes, crippling errors to cost them those games. I still would say there's progress. I mean, there were times last year when Auburn was finishing games without 100 yards passing.
Yeah, remember? Like multiple times.
Multiple conference games where Auburn would finish, and it was like, you know, the quarterback would be 8 for 17 with 88 yards passing or something. And it's like, this is, you know, I mean burn this game film. Like, you know, you don't even want, like, I do think Auburn has made strides, especially as a passing offense. Have they turned it over too much? For sure. Are they running it enough? No. I think that the stat I've been pointing at a lot this week, Specter, is Auburn is fifth in the conference in yards per carry as a rushing offense. They're fifth in yards per carry. They're ninth in rushing yards per game, which would tell me you're not running it enough, right? When you're fifth in, like, usually if you're ninth in yards per game,
turnovers keep you from having the ball too.
Turnovers will do that too.
And running it more.
But it's like, usually if you're, it's almost though we're a team that can run the ball and chooses not to at times, which is wild because most teams would kill to be able to run the ball.
Well, this is what I think is going to happen tomorrow. I think Coach is going to run the ball till Georgia won't let us run the ball. And then he's going to put in the option plays. And to do that, which quarterback is going to be able to do that? Well,
Peyton.
It says Peyton should be the one to do that.
Peyton's by far the best running threat of Auburn's quarterbacks.
Yeah, but if that doesn't work out, I mean, if they stop Peyton from running, what do you do then? Do you put in one of the other quarterbacks?
No, I still think they think Peyton gives them the best chance throwing the ball too. I mean, he had 300-plus yards against Oklahoma last week through the air. Like, I still think they would – I mean, if they have to alter the approach and throw it a little more, I still think they would probably want to be throwing the ball, especially in Athens with Peyton.
Yeah. Well, we'll see, guys. I don't think Auburn's got a chance, but I'd like to see him upset these guys really bad.
Well, Specter, you know, I mean, you've seen both these sides, Auburn and Georgia, appear not to have a chance to win this game. So, until it's over, I'm thinking there's a chance. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but
Specter, how about this? I don't think a slow starting Auburn has a chance tomorrow.
No,
like I think if Georgia can jump on Auburn early, then it's probably it's probably going to look like a pinata party. But like,
I tell you what, I hope it's like the Alabama Georgia game. Mm-hmm. I hope they jump all over us and we come back and go ahead.
Well, no, but the team that jumped all over him won.
I was saying earlier, I hope it's more like the Kentucky Ole Miss game from last week where Kentucky went in off a should-have-won game or over Georgia on the road and shocked much higher-ranked Ole Miss team.
Specter, it's amazing. I was just randomly, we were talking with Coach about some classic Auburn-Georgia games in the rivalry. The thought of that game in 97 when Auburn had just been shut out by Mississippi State, and they go a week later with Damian Craig and a run game that had not run the ball at all. And they just decide we're going to run it 50 times for 100, 180, 190 yards, control the game that way. And they beat a top 10 Georgia team in Athens. I mean, granted, it was 30 years ago. But it's like, I mean, if this team, I don't know. I think that if I do want, I wonder how much more dangerous an Auburn team that felt like it's not from the players, like from the coaching staff, really embracing we're a team that can run the football and control games that way. I wonder how much more dangerous this team could be, with that approach. And maybe you see it tomorrow.
You know, one thing I miss on Auburn's offense
is that
H-back that was blocking all the time.
Well, Luke Deal's usually blocking when he comes in. You're right. I mean, there hasn't been a Prosh or a Chandler Cox in a while. But you know, I mean, I think Auburn thought they were going to get some of that from Brandon Frazier. This year he broke his foot.
Yeah, that was a tough loss. That was really a bigger loss, I think, than a lot of people realize.
He broke his foot a little bit earlier in the season. I think Luke Deal's being drafted into action. New father Luke Deal is being drafted into action as a primary blocker in those situations too. And I think that's going to be the closest thing. And he's a heck of a blocker. But it's those are important jobs.
All right, guys. Talk to you later.
Appreciate it, Spectre.
Great stuff, Spectre.
By the way, all right, so I looked up. I was just looking back. Auburn's averaging right at 100 yards a game more this year than they did through the first five games a year ago.
Just total offense.
And on the season as well. Last year, Auburn averaged 5.5 yards per play. Auburn's averaging 7.6 yards per play this year. The offense is more they're moving the ball better. I'm not going to say they're more productive because they're not scoring the points that they should for the yards that they're getting. Auburn's points per yard, and that's very saber, it's like a sabermetric kind of number, but that's something I think that matters. I mean, if you're piling up a lot of yards, you're not scoring points, you're not being effective. You're wasting some of the production that you have, and that's what it's been for Auburn thus far this year. 334-321-1390. We'll go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in as we head into the final half hour of the Friday Drive.
Welcome back in. Hour number two of the Friday edition of the Drive. Bill and Dan in the studio. Coach Don Dunn, the defensive line coach of the Drive, here in the studio hanging out with us. Appreciate it, Coach. It's fun to, I mean, not only to get your analysis on, you know, the point of attack right now, because a lot of football hasn't changed,
right,
but also to get to hear stories about some of these rivalry games, some of your memories of, how about this? 2004 was it's the 20-year anniversary of that incredible season for Auburn.
That was another tough game, home game.
Home game.
We had to win.
Had to win. College game day in the house for that one. I met Scott Van Pelt that weekend.
I'll be done.
As a matter of fact, he was in town for
what was that. 20-6, something like
20-6. I'd say probably the most famous moment in that game is a hit from Junior Rosegreen over the middle.
Which would now be illegal.
It would now be criminal.
The youngsters from on the line were like, there was a hit in that game. Who was that guy?
Rose Green,
Junior.
Who had earlier in that season had the four interception game against Tennessee, right?
At Tennessee.
In Knoxville, Junior Rose Green, a force
over
the
middle.
You know, folks might lament some of the safety precautions, you know, some of the rules that have been implemented in football lately. If you remember early 2000s safety play, if you remember a Junior Rose Green or
Rashad Gilyard's hit on the Wyoming kid,
Major Wright. Remember remember Major Wright at Florida?
Yeah, Now Georgia had some hitters too.
Oh, Sean Taylor, LaRon Landry. You know, you had some Roy Williams.
Yeah.
Like, this is the era of Polamalu. You had safeties. You're shuddering over there.
Knock your head off.
You had safety play that was going. I mean, it was absolutely as physical as football got. And that champ Anthony hit a couple weeks ago was like a little taste.
Yep.
But it's like hits like that were commonplace and encouraged. And it was no man's land over the middle. And that's, I mean, yeah, that hit, you know, you'll see that Auburn Georgia 2004 hit. Like, that's a little sample of what that game, you know, could be like at times in the SEC.
Very
physical. In the early 2000s. Cadillac throws a touchdown pass, I believe, in the 0-4. I believe you guys run the toss, the toss play, and get Cadillac an open touchdown. And Auburn comes out of that game. I mean, that was probably at home. I mean, the victory over LSU is the come from behind is super triumphant. But that weekend when Auburn beats Georgia as a top five team, knowing it's going to be a couple tough games, but also seeing the finish line. If you beat Georgia, if you beat Bama and Tuscaloosa, undefeated regular season, you're going to the SEC championship game.
Yep.
We'll see what happens with the BCS and all that. But that weekend felt like no one was coming to Auburn that weekend and winning that game. Like, the way you know that was the weekend where Yeah, sure. Bring on Oklahoma. Bring on USC. Like that 04,
right?
That 04 team was at the peak of college football that weekend. It probably felt like it on the field.
Yeah, you know, very exciting, but very nervous for the coaches and the players. But it was a great time, and very lucky to be a part of that. But we just had great players. Good players and great kids
and great coaches.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I don't know about that.
Well, and
some of those great kids are great coaches now too.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
We saw Travis a couple weeks ago coming.
Yeah,
to,
how about that?
Coming to Auburn. Yeah.
All right. We'll look at the other games around the SEC and the country. But first, let's get back to the phone. What you got?
Want to say real quick before we get to Steve? Jason's been doing a great job too, getting better every week on the radio with.
Very proud of Jason.
And yeah, he's just an outstanding representative for Auburn and someone else who, I mean, because of that era, he's full of stories.
I
think he's at his best when, I mean, his in-game analysis is excellent. You know, he's always been able to do that. When he's able to lean on remembering a story or a country saying or something.
He's just an old country boy from Taylorsville, Mississippi. Was so shy, couldn't hardly get him to say boo, and now he's on the national radio.
mentioned. I wish I'd remembered this with Andy earlier in the week, Bill. But Ben Leard was on the pregame this past weekend, and he talked about a hit in. I don't remember the game. It would have been did that team play Oklahoma? That wouldn't have been. I don't think it would have been Oklahoma. So Ben Leard was talking about a hit that had taken him out of a game, and the expression he used was it knocked him stone grits, and I really got a kick out of someone being knocked stone. I'm gonna try to steal that at some point during the season for Troy.
334-321-1390. Back to the drive hotline.
We got Steve.
Hey, y'all were talking about that 2004 Georgia game. The thing I remember most about that is that was probably the greatest opening drive in Auburn history, and Al Borges ran nothing he'd run all season. I think the opening touchdown was actually an option play from Jason to Cadillac. We hadn't run the speed option all year, mm-hmm. and I mean he zigged and he zagged and I mean we ran it was I want to say it was like 9 or 10 play drive, and Georgia was on their heels, and you know unfortunately in that time and. They, you know, we could have ran up the score on a lot of people that year, and that wasn't Tubbs' modus operandi, and it might have hurt us in the polls because, you know, we still believed in it was easy to see who the best team was by who the best team was, not by running up a score. But that opening drive was a masterpiece. If you can go back and watch the game, just it is just offense. It's an offensive coordinator just abusing. I don't even know who Georgia's defense coordinator was that year. He abused them. It was beautiful. I mean, he had an answer for everything they did, and they were on their heels, and it was beautiful. I remember when we scored going, there ain't no way they're beating us today. We can score at will. It was just beautiful. I mean,
Steve, I'm gonna take exception with one thing you said though, because I think you could have tried to run up the score on people. I think you probably could have played a tougher non-conference schedule.
Auburn would have still been a
That wasn't our fault.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Like, no, I think both those things could have been true, and I still think that when 1-2, when your preseason 1-2 win every game in that format, it's just going to be hard for anybody to jump, and probably impossible for anybody to jump, and it's too bad because we'll never know what would have happened.
Well, I agree with you. I don't think anybody's going to beat USC anyways. I think USC was the best team in the country, but Oklahoma was running the score up on Little Sisters of the Poor in the Big 12 all season. And we were playing real football. We could have scored. We could have named a number against Tennessee and Knoxville and didn't do it because that's not what we did. We had a 3-score lead and we ran the football to run out the clock.
It's amazing how Steve, it's amazing how these things work. Brian Van Gorder, you're a Georgia defensive coordinator.
Is that right?
In 2004.
Wow. He deserved it. He deserved it. Y'all have a good evening.
Thank you. Good hearing from you, Steve. Yeah. Yeah,
amazing how these things work.
Yeah. Yep. 334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline.
It was Neil Callaway and Brian Van Gorder as Richt's offensive and defensive coordinators for the first like 4 or 5 years of his tenure there at Georgia.
All right.
Was it Donnan before?
Yes.
Was it Donnan to Richt? Yeah.
After Goff. Yeah, let's see. The matchups tomorrow in the SEC. You mentioned Auburn, the middle game there on ABC. The opening game, it's really interesting one.
Yes.
Missouri, a slight underdog. The unbeaten number 9 ranked Missouri Tigers are an underdog.
Who had an open date?
That's right. An underdog at Texas A&M. I
don't know.
I just feel like Missouri, I think, I guess I've just been expecting more of them, but they've won. They've been able to win. And I think, I guess I still don't believe in Texas A&M. I think Mike Elko's a heck of a coach. But I think Eli Drinkwitz and Missouri are going to go in there with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And the fact that it's an 11 o'clock game should help them. I sort of like the Tigers. I like the Tigers in College Station.
I think Missouri has a better offense, and you would think that that would translate to, like, they should. I mean, I just wonder where A&M's points come from. At the same time, I can't shake how normal Missouri looks, especially at the line of scrimmage, having not played teams like A&M, not played teams with you know, A&M's considered to be top half of the league talent sort of situation.
I'd say
borderline. I mean, better than Boston College and Vanderbilt.
Yes.
And Missouri's struggles against those two teams have me wondering what it will look like when Missouri plays it. Now, maybe they can.
I do think the open, but like Coach says, I think an open date could really help.
I think the open date could help, and I think that maybe Missouri's playing down to their previous opponents, mm-hmm. and when you give them a top 25 opponent.
Maybe they've been looking at getting into the competition like here against A&M.
But the other question would be, maybe they're just okay at the line of scrimmage. And if they're just okay at the line of scrimmage.
Oh, then we'll find that out pretty early tomorrow.
I think we'll find that out tomorrow, and I think it'll be a tough day for Eli Drinkwitz.
I don't – just looking at the schedule, A&M has played a tougher schedule guys were saying. But, that's going to be an interesting game.
I mean, if A&M – I made the point yesterday with Pascal. Like, if A&M had held on and beaten Notre Dame, they're a top 10 team right now, and they're pretty much the same team that will play Missouri tomorrow.
Right. But, I mean, here we are almost at the midpoint of the season, and we still don't really know about
a few teams.
Either of them.
Not just in the SEC, but especially since we're talking the SEC. I don't know how good some of these teams are.
That's exactly right.
You know, crazy. I would put LSU on that list of teams where it's like I don't know.
What do we expect? Kentucky.
They've played two SCs, and I'm not sure. Like, you know, both of the games left me wondering
how good is Carolina? What are the Ole Miss South Carolina game?
Georgia.
I mean, that's
crazy.
That's the game after, right? So you got Missouri, Texas A&M, then Auburn, Georgia. And then the next ball game up is at the same time over on ESPN is the Ole Miss South Carolina game.
Woo.
And I'm hearing
at
a lot
South Carolina.
I'm hearing a lot of people going, Lane's gonna run it up on South Carolina. Well, that's what people thought Kentucky was gonna do too.
Yeah, I've got a lot of buddies still in Oxford and they're not real happy with Mr. Lane this week. I'm just telling you, they're all saying, well, all he cared about was going to Florida, you know, crazy.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Is he the new Houston nut?
That was
every time he loses, the fans say, "Hey, he spent the week interviewing for jobs."
Every Gator fan was celebrating their loss last week, thinking, "Oh, that good. That makes it easier for him to leave Oxford."
I mean, for folks who may not remember, that was the knock on Houston Nutt. Was the belief that every year at especially at Arkansas, not so much at Ole Miss, but when he was at Arkansas, there was every time Arkansas had a pulse, there was the belief that Houston Nutt had the presentation to other athletic directors ready to go, and boy, did it rub. You know who else? I think Petrino had that knock against him for a while at Louisville.
Obviously after the plane ride was found out.
Yes, there were times when Louisville people wondered how committed Bobby was long term. But no, you don't want those feelings lingering with a fan base where it's like believing this guy's a mercenary who's going to leave us the moment he can for greener pastures is interesting too, because I mean, Florida needs to get its NIL situation, settled, and it's been a while since they were great as a consistently great as an SEC program. You probably have to go back to Urban Meyer, for those days. Like it's a curious sort of deal, and I do wonder if it's as foregone a conclusion as people think that Lane Kiffin is the next head coach at Florida.
All right. You know, with the exception of the Georgia game, the ranked teams are on the road. The higher ranked teams are on the road. Missouri at A&M, Ole Miss at South Carolina. Alabama is in Nashville to take on a much better Vanderbilt team that Alabama still should handle comfortably. Although, I mean, Alabama is sort of they're a little tough to gauge as well.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
they've given up some big plays at times. They've struggled to be consistent,
but when Vanderbilt
but Jalen Milroe can he and Ryan Williams are a couple of guys that can make something happen at any second.
When Vanderbilt has the ball, like are you going to be confident in their ability to get first downs and keep it? That I think is a big problem too. Like
and the other thing to watch and it just seems to happen a lot. We'll see if Pavia can make it through the game healthy.
Yeah,
I mean Alabama has a knack.
Especially running quarterbacks.
Getting after these mobile quarterbacks.
Yeah, I'd be nervous about trying to play like that for a whole game against Alabama as a quarterback and that's a real tough draw for Vanderbilt. Even at home, like they're playing in Nashville. What kind of home field advantage are you going to have? Like, I mean, how many Bama fans?
A little more than usual. I mean,
yeah, there'll be more Alabama fans.
Always. I mean, yeah. I can't recall a Vandy game where I've ever felt like, boy, they've got a home field advantage in this one. That's the 3:15 game on the SEC network. Then tomorrow night, the ABC 6:30 game is number 4 Tennessee at Arkansas. I think that one's going to be interesting.
I wonder if Arkansas,
if Tennessee jumps them, they can blow them out.
I have this sneaking suspicion that Arkansas has kind of overachieved to this point in the season.
Well,
and we're going to see them struggle against Tennessee and LSU because Tennessee
and
LSU
Green,
were really good.
The only game he didn't
turn
the ball over was against Auburn.
Yeah.
I mean, turned it over last week.
Oh, they could easily.
They beat Texas A&M last week.
They could be 5-0. Like Arkansas could say, like Arkansas could very easily look at a couple of plays in the Oklahoma State game, missed field goals, missed opportunity in overtime.
Yeah.
You look at the A&M game. Like Arkansas could be 5-0 team. I still would probably look at them as a 5-0 team that doesn't. I don't think they have the horses.
They don't against
the best teams. And I think Tennessee
does,
and I think LSU probably does too. Like those are the next two for Arkansas.
And that's one of the things David Pascal's mentioned
a
few times is multiple 5th and 6th year seniors on both sides of the line of scrimmage. Yeah.
I just think this is a game where Arkansas could be a little bit out of there.
The only hope I think Arkansas has if Bobby can keep the ball and not turn it over. But you're right, Tennessee has bang 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 plays. It seems like just waiting to happen.
And the Tennessee quarterback situation is an argument for taking a year. And if you like, I mean, what Heupel's done.
Of course, it's good when you have somebody that, I mean, that was playing as well as they had a year ago.
Oh, sure. No, they've had good quarterback play since Heupel arrived for the most part. But like being able to build a bridge to a guy like Nico that doesn't play him as a true freshman that gets him on the bench for a full year and a full offseason as QB1, and
he's
then he's
so good that more and more people can pronounce his name now.
Another one where I would say give it probably another year and a half in college football, and this is a guy who could make the jump very early to the pros because he's got the magic.
He really does. And then the final game in Gainesville. This one is crazy. This could be. I mean, I can see this one being one-sided either way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would think that. I mean, UCF until last week, I thought, boy, this is going to be terrible. This may be the end. If Billy Napier made it to the UCF game and lost, I figured that would do it. I don't know what to expect out of Gus's UCF team this week.
I still don't think Billy Napier.
I don't know what to expect out of Billy Napier's Gators.
I still don't know if Napier can lose and still.
No, I think a loss. I think a loss here, and it's still going to be tough for him to make it to the end of the season.
Yeah, and
starts off 0-2 against in-state schools.
But it'd be a rough 2-week stretch for Gus too. I mean, if you lose at home to Dion, and then turn around at home to Dion.
I mean, they were
shelled. They were shelled.
I couldn't believe that. Yeah. I really couldn't.
Yeah, run over by Colorado and really not, couldn't muster much of a challenge. But they, by the way, they're a little bit better. Like and Colorado lost some close games in the Pac-12.
They are.
They're a little bit better. I mean, that Travis Hunter would play anywhere, wherever he wants. Like this guy is
would play.
I think
a lot of places.
I think Travis Hunter's a receiver. Like my thinking would be like if you're trying to figure out like what do you do with that guy at the next level. I just wonder, and if he's a superstar receiver, I wonder how much defensive back you want him playing mm-hmm. at the NFL level, because he'd have to make tackles and he would have to do some other things. And if you have a potential number one, top 10 at his position receiver, how many tackles, how many times do you want him tackling the other team's running back too? Like, I wonder if you mm-hmm. maybe just think that's all you're going to do at the NFL level. But what he's doing right now is you know, playing like the best player in all college football. I just don't know what to expect from Florida. I have no idea.
I'm really interested in watching it though.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So
Clemson and Florida State. Interesting one too.
And Florida State's favored?
I don't know.
No, Clemson's favored against Florida State.
Okay, I saw somewhere today. Yeah. I guess somebody just had it wrong.
Yeah.
I looked and went,
Clemson's favored in that game.
Yeah, they should be.
UCLA, I believe four. I think it's 14.
UCLA's going to Penn State. That's crazy.
No no DJU in the Clemson game. I think Brock Glenn gets the start for Florida State. They are struggling.
Yes, they are.
That's what's going on there.
Yep. Hey, we need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind it down here on the Friday Drive.
Michigan.
Ride and Seek. The annual bike safety adventure is set.
Wow, I guess we're done. I didn't realize we were out of time when we came back. So, fun show today. It flew. We appreciate all of our listeners. Don, what you got planned this weekend?
Just staying home, smoking some wings, flipping channels.
All right, and Dan, you're headed to Athens.
I'm waking up early, grabbing a breakfast biscuit somewhere, and making the making the drive out to Sanford Stadium.
And, be safe.
And I should be a grandfather again by
all
the
right,
time we
congratulations.
Come on the air Monday. I think there's no rushing things. I said, look, Scott and Amanda are always late, so why isn't their baby going to be as well? All right, good luck to the Tigers this weekend and tonight. Yep. Don't forget, coming up in about a half an hour, it's airtime for Auburn and Central on Wings. Lee Scott and Dadeville on AU100. Have a great weekend, everybody. We're out of here. Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.